Is the word law friendly or frightful? Welcome to The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson, your host and study guide, author, and my two conversation partners today are Brant Berglund from the School of Theology and Albert Handel, who is our campus chaplain here at Walla Walla University. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks.
Now, I'd like to explore this word law a bit. I've got a couple, three examples here I want to toss out, and I want you to rank these in terms of friendliness, scale of 1 to 10. Okay? First question, Mr. Thompson, you have broken the law. Second question, you have fulfilled the requirements for your BA degree. Third question, you broke your arm because you fell, breaking the law of gravity. Now, each of those involve the law in some sense. That second one is an intriguing one. You fulfilled the requirements. And, of course, in everyday life, that means we don't have to worry about them anymore. Is that what fulfilling the law of love means?
It's very clear that the first one, Mr. Thompson, you've broken the law, is something you'd hear a police officer say when he pulls you over or
right.
in a court.
Right.
That sounds definitely negative. And yet, if I break that law, the experience may be negative for me if I break it. But if I have violated a law that, let's say I don't drink alcohol, but let's say I did and I hurt somebody dearly, the law is a very positive law. My breaking of it is what is negative. So even there, if we say you've broken the law is not always a bad thing. How we feel about it sometimes is bad, especially if you feel it's intrusive.
Yeah, the first one doesn't take a lot of effort to break the law, but it does take some intentionality. And then the second one, you fulfilled the requirements for the degree, takes a tremendous amount of effort, and yet it's positive.
Yeah.
And then the last one there takes very little effort and is unintentional. And
And it's a different type of law as well.
It's a different type of law. And so it's interesting to me that the one that comes off as the most positive in this list is the one that takes the most tremendous amount of effort.
That's very interesting. I hadn't really thought of that before. Now, let me take another one.
It's true.
This is seatbelt laws and the way we use the law to encourage people to obey seatbelt requirements. The one that doesn't work at all is buckle up. We love you.
You mean love isn't a positive motivation or it sounds a little bit too...
Doesn't work. In fact, there was one. I mean, that was at the Walla Walla General Hospital where it used to be, and the sign was there. I think it's still there. But then there's another one, also a hospital sign, buckle up or we'll see you soon.
Hmm. A little fear motivator.
A little fear. And then buckle up, it softens it a bit to say buckle up, it's our law. But the one that really has... Buckle up, it's the law. I've never heard anybody say it's the law with a friendly tone of voice. And then the one that really works most of all is click it or ticket. The more expensive it becomes, the more likely you are to obey it.
Well, and in my experience, the most effective one beyond any of these is just a very, very, very simple beep. That beep drives me crazy in the car, that needs me to, it's just a very subtle, very small thing. But the beep in the car, until I put the seatbelt on, I'll do it every time. In a car that doesn't have the beep, I somehow forget.
And I don't know if your car does this, but if I wait for a minute, and I've tested it, driving from my mom's house to mine, which is a block and a half, if I don't put my seatbelt on, it'll go beep, 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 beep. And it gets more annoying and more insistent.
Yeah, the car still works, but I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
And so I put my seatbelt on.
Oh, that's interesting. Now, let's plug in some biblical passages here. And Matthew 5:17 is an intriguing one. Do not think that I have come to abolish the law and the prophets. I have not come to abolish, but to fulfill. Now, some of our evangelical friends would like to interpret that passage, I've not come to abolish, but to abolish.
But to take care of the requirements so you don't have to do them. But the word fulfill is an interesting one when applied in the New Testament, like to Bible prophecy. It doesn't mean there's a one-to-one correspondence, I will keep the requirements or I will do exactly what the prophecy said and therefore I will empty it of meaning. No, Jesus is saying, I will keep the law in such a way that you can look at it and know exactly what the law is about. You shall not murder. That's fine, but it doesn't go very far, does it? You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. It's like, well, I cannot take anybody's goods, but I can certainly steal their reputation, right? There's all kinds of ways I can violate all those laws. And Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, in just a few verses, is going to tell them straight up how he feels about the law. And he says, you guys have just been trying to use it as a checklist. That was never its purpose, never its intention.
Now, another passage, this has to do with the Sabbath. 6 days you shall do your work, but on the seventh day you shall rest, that your ox and your donkey may have relief, and your homeborn slave and the resident alien may be refreshed. Now, that's a very positive twist on the Sabbath law.
But isn't this is an extension of the Sabbath law, right? This isn't the commandment. Even our use of the word commandments is problematic. They're not given in the Hebrew imperative mood at all, right? They're given as imperfects, which is just uncompleted action. But this is giving us the purpose, which is a beautiful thing.
There is no negative imperative in Hebrew. And then Mark 2:27-28, the Sabbath was made for humankind, not humankind for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.
I've always wondered why that second phrase is somehow the natural outflow of that first explanation. That explanation, so Sabbath was made for humans and not humans for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath.
Yeah. Well, there's a bit of a wrinkle there because man is Lord even of the Sabbath. And I remember Malcolm Maxwell says, if you look at, he was a former colleague of mine, he said, man is really Lord of the Sabbath. Not just the Son of Man, but man. See, the word Son of Man in Aramaic is the same word for man. And my guess is we could chew on that one for a while, but the lesson needs to go on. Way too much on this lesson. Romans 13:8-10. Owe no one anything except to love one another, for the one who loves another has fulfilled the law. That's a marvelous way of putting it. You fulfilled it, not making it of none effect, but you filled it full of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a better way. You shall love your neighbors yourself. Love does no wrong to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law.
So is the challenge then that we have when we hear the word love, love your neighbor and love God, is the problem for us that we don't know how to do it and we don't know where to go with it? And so then we have to, we have to extrapolate them all out, right? And I remember, Alden, one of the classes, first class I took here at Walla Walla University as a transfer student back in 1992. It was an Old Testament exegesis class. And you taught us at 8 in the morning about the one, the two, the ten, and the many, the law of love. Love God, love your neighbor. The Ten Commandments applying to our love for God and our love for man. And then the many as extensions of that that may be time and place related. Mm-hmm. Does it still apply? Have you changed your mind on that?
No, I think that's the one stable thing. In fact, I use in my teaching, the law pyramid is something which never changes. And in fact, it's very interesting to see how Ellen White, for those of us who come from an Adventist background, how she uses that. And in the study guide, I've given a whole sheet of quotations I've used before. One of the most intriguing passages is Thoughts from the Mount of Blessings goes like this. In heaven, service is not rendered in the spirit of legality. When Satan rebelled against the law of Jehovah, the thought that there was a law came to the angels almost as an awakening to something unthought of. The law. Jeremiah 31 is another one we could have looked at. Law is written on the heart, and no one shall teach one another, say, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest. And that's in the Old Testament. That's the New Covenant in the Old Testament. So we have some marvelous statements in Scripture that would help us to see law in a more positive sense. And I think probably the English word leads us astray, law, whereas Torah in the Old Testament is a guide to life.
Instruction.
Instruction, sure.
Guidance, yeah.
And you find that in Psalm 119, for example. The whole psalm is talking about the law. Now, there's an interesting wrinkle. I have a German translation. It's a good news, so it's excerpts from the Old Testament. And when it comes to the Psalm 119, they leave that out completely because the Germans are so sensitive to law, obedient Germans.
Which is too bad because to read David's heart in that psalm is to recognize how much he loves the ways of Yahweh.
Yeah.
And he would delight to walk in those ways.
So as we look at law, it's God's intention that we live a fulfilled life. And the laws are intended to be for our good, not to haunt us and torment us. And for that reason, we often need to think again whenever we use the word law. And I don't know what a good substitute word is in English for law. Do you?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think when we think of a law, it's something outside of us, something that we aspire to.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the place that I go to try and understand, man, how am I to make sense of this in my life? I go to Ezekiel 26. A new heart also will I give you. A new spirit will I put within you. I'll take away your stony heart, and I'll give you a heart of flesh. And I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. And so I think of the law and I say, well, Lord, is it outside, inside, upside, downside? You do the work in me. That's what I need.
And yeah. What's so amazing, Albert, is that some of the best quotations in this respect are from the Old Testament. So on that cheerful note, let's close our discussions for the quarter. I want to thank you, Brent and Albert, for your help. And I want to thank Kristen Byerly for her good work as our program engineer. And I want to thank each one of you for listening in. For the Good Word, I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.